This is Talk Star Wars,
the official podcast at talkstarwars.co.uk.
Welcome back to Talk Star Wars, the official podcast at talkstarwars.co.uk. I'm travelling at the moment, so I'm unable to schedule a new podcast for the next couple of weeks. So what we're going to do is I'm going to put together a series of recordings that I made for a limited YouTube series over on the Movie Geeks Film News YouTube channel. The original recordings were 6-part, so I'm going to put them out in 2 3-part chunks. They're called The Kessel Run, and they're recordings I made on the commute to work. Just random Star Wars musings that might contain some truth as we get close to The Force Awakens. The things we're learning make me think I may have got a couple of bits right. There'll soon be some new content coming. Me and the guys plan to get together and do some more Star Wars podcasting. Don't forget to subscribe. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, you can do. I'm at Talk Star Wars. Like the Facebook page, facebook.com/Talk Star Wars. Keep an eye on talkstarwars.co.uk for the latest in Star Wars news. Enjoy these 3 episodes of The Kessel Run.
This is the Movie Geeks Film News Podcast Network, and you are watching...
Oh, really? Okay.
Hi everyone, it's Mark from mgfn.co.uk, and this may or may not become The Kessel Run, a series of recordings I make as I make the commute to work, my own personal Kessel Run, except I'm not driving a piece of junk, I'm driving a little hybrid. So this is episode 1, and in episode 1 I'm going to be talking about the spin-off movies, the standalone movies, or as we now know them, the anthology films, and more specifically, who should direct the second anthology film now that Josh Trank has left the party. So in 2012 we found out from Lucasfilm that they'd been acquired by Disney, and that Disney were now planning to make more Star Wars films, not just another trilogy in the enumerated series of films, but some standalone films, spin-offs that wouldn't relate to the central saga, the Skywalker saga. We'll be having a look in another episode at what that Skywalker saga means, specifically for the next trilogy, starting with episode 7, but what really intrigued everybody at the time was the decision to make standalone films. What could they be about? Who could they centre around? The rumours started spinning that we were looking at Han Solo origin stories, Boba Fett origin stories, and that's pretty much where I checked out. I don't want to see characters that already have full arcs explored any further. They don't really need it. But what I did want to see was the exploration of some of the downtime between the trilogies, specifically Obi-Wan Kenobi. Now I'm hoping we'll still get an Obi-Wan Kenobi standalone film, an anthology entry centred around Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan Kenobi and the 20 years of downtime between the first trilogy and the prequel trilogy. But what we do know now is that we're getting a standalone movie, an anthology entry from director Gareth Edwards, who did Monsters and Godzilla. And until recently, we had Josh Trank penned in to do the second standalone film, tentatively titled Tin Can. So read into that what you will. We found out just after Celebration that we'd lost Trank. He's gone, possibly for nebulous creative reasons, possibly let go. We don't really need to go into what caused his departure from these series of films, but he has gone. So my question is, who should replace Josh Trank? Now I have an idea, and I've started a little campaign on Twitter, and you'll all get a chance to get involved in that in a second, but we need to have a quick look at the way Lucasfilm have gone with their hiring of directors for these films, because there's clues in there as to the way they view these things. And if you look at
the recruitment of somebody like Gareth Edwards, and you look at the recruitment for episode 8 of somebody like Rian Johnson, you can see that the producers are favouring filmmakers with indie sensibilities, the sort of sensibilities that George Lucas had when he came to the original movie in 1977. So if you look at something like Gareth Edwards' original entry into his filmography, Monsters, he made that himself. He's writer, producer and director on that film. He did the VFX himself, which is pretty damn impressive. And it's a great film. It's a modest film. It's effective. Really quite a skillful filmmaker. And then he makes the transition into a massive budget entry like Godzilla. And you can see that similar path echoed with someone like Rian Johnson. He's made the move from little indie films like Brick, where he's the writer, the producer and the director. Something noirish, something original. We hadn't seen that sort of thing in a long, long time. And then his most recent film, Looper, where he's made the move to the bigger leagues, bigger budgets, bigger stars, with bigger egos, if you believe Kevin Smith. And given us something like to go toe-to-toe with some of the bigger blockbusters, a fantastic action film, one of my favourite films of that year. Now he's directed episode 8. JJ's got a similar path. His beginnings were modest as a writer and producer and director. You can see a pattern forming here. And he's made his way up from television through some of the huge successes on TV like Lost, from modest fare like Alias. And now he's done the Star Trek movies, and now he's doing Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and breathing new life into a long dormant franchise. So, indie filmmakers throughout, young, aggressive filmmakers with indie sensibilities. So, Josh Trank, was he that? I guess he was, kind of. He's writer, producer, director on Chronicle. He's gone out there and made an original movie. We hadn't seen anything like that in a while. It was a bloody good film. And now he's made the move to the bigger leagues. He's kind of mirroring what Gareth Edwards and Rian Johnson have done. He's doing the Fantastic Four reboot of Fox, which may or may not have led to the problems that beleaguered him with the Star Wars anthology movie that he's been working on. But this is going to be a major blockbuster movie this summer. Whether or not people know it now, it's going to be a hit. It's going to be huge. It's a Marvel property. It's going to draw people to it like nobody can predict at this point. Now, he's left, so we need to get somebody that has that similar pedigree to fill his place. And I've got one specific filmmaker in mind that I want to get everybody's support to get him in the role of director for the second anthology film. That guy's name is Carl Newman. If you haven't heard of Carl Newman before, you need to do a quick Google search for him and pick up a couple of his pieces of creativity, not just film. Firstly, you need to go and watch Fanboys. Fanboys is a film that's built around Star Wars. It's about a group of friends in 1998, 99, something like that, that are on a pilgrimage to Skywalker Ranch. They're trying to get their terminally ill friend to see The Phantom Menace before it gets its global release. It's a comedy, it's lighthearted, it's a sensitive look at some pretty dark subject matter, and it's all really just a love letter to Star Wars. It talks about Star Wars fans, about fandom, about the obsession that it breeds, and it's a comedy. It's really well done. He's got such a light touch. So that's his indie entry, writer, producer, director. Something else you need to check out as well, if you're a Star Wars fan, you need to check out the audio dramas that Carl Newman has written and directed and produced. I guess we could call them the Rogue series, or the Smuggler's series. Smuggler's Gambit and Smuggler's Bounty. And there'll be a third installment, I think, at next year's celebration, called Smuggler's Revenge. Now, this guy, he knows what he's doing. He's a fanboy from the start. He's at the right age to have grown up with Star Wars. He'll remember the radio dramas. And he's written and produced these radio dramas with talent like one of my favourites, David W. Collins, who does Han Solo. Jimmy Mack from the Rebel Force Radio podcast, who does all the audio designs, sound effects, works that soundboard, plays Chewie and R2. And plenty of other Star Wars alum, like Darth Maul himself, Sam Witwer from the Clone Wars, portraying different roles. Seek them out. They're only short, very entertaining, and again, a love letter to Star Wars. Now, this summer, the end of this month, in a few days, depending on when you're listening to this, it was May, that we saw the release of Barely Lethal. This is Kyle's entry into mainstream now. He's dealing with a bigger budget, and he's dealing with bigger stars, especially Samuel L. Jackson, Star Wars veteran himself. Sam played Mace Windu in the prequels. And this film centres around young female assassins integrating into the real world. It looks really funny. Again, that's probably his skill set, to give us something humorous. But it looks really competently managed as well. It's got the gloss and the sheen of a bigger budget entry. And I think this guy's going to go a long way. And his first stop needs to be a Star Wars film. The next project needs to be an anthology movie. And I'd love to see him take over from Josh Trank and take the director's seat on this film that's being tentatively titled Tin Can, which could be about R2, it could be about Boba Fett, who knows. So what do you need to do to lend your support? Well, on the screen now, this is going to be a tube cast. So it's going to be a podcast for YouTube. So you're probably watching it right there now. So on screen is a QR code. So you have a bit of fun with that. Scan the QR code and it will open up a base tweet. If it doesn't work, then have a look in the... If you can't scan it for whatever reason, if you're watching this on your iPhone, have a look in the description of the video. I'll put the direct link there. If you click that, it's going to open up a base tweet. And you can lend your support to getting Kyle into that director's chair on Anthology 2, Tin Can. Star Wars Anthology 2, Tin Can. Please do it. Let's get the public voice heard. We need an indie filmmaker out there that we don't want... One of the big guns coming in. It needs to be one of us. It needs to be a fan. Somebody who loves Star Wars out there making these films. So scan that. Get amongst it. Join the conversation. I'll be back next time.
This is the Movie Geeks Film News Podcast Network. And you are watching...
really? Okay.
Hey everyone, it's Mark from mgfn.co.uk, and this is episode 2 of the Kessel Run Tubecast. That's a podcast for YouTube. Very clever. In episode 1, we spoke about the anthology movies and the directors of those anthology movies and who we thought should replace Josh Trank now that he's departed Anthology 2. I said I wanted to see Kyle Newman in the role of director and invited you all to add your weight to the conversation and click a little link. Now, that link's in the description to this video as well. It says vote for Kyle. If you head down there, click it, it'll open a tweet. Just send that tweet if you believe that he should be the director. Anyway, on to episode 2. And I think we're going to stay with the anthology movies for the time being and talk about who Felicity Jones may be playing in Rogue One. Now, we know when she was announced that she was announced as one of the leads in Rogue One, she would be a rebel soldier. But my thoughts immediately turned to who she could be playing. Now, I did write this up last week on a blog post on mgfn.co.uk. The link to that is below if you want to read that. I kind of broke it down to three options. One, that she would be playing a completely new, original character. Two, that she would be playing a character to come across from the new expanded universe. And three, that she may be playing a character we already know from the original trilogy. So looking at the first and most likely option, I would imagine, she's going to play a completely original character. Now, there aren't enough female characters in Star Wars, so this is obviously going to be welcome that she could be a new character. And It adds a bit of weight to it if we don't know what happens to her. Now, that applies to the Expanded Universe character as well, but it doesn't apply to the potential for her to be playing a character we already know from the original trilogy, because we'll kind of know what her fate is. But if she does play an original character, then she could very well lose a life in this film. That would add a bit of gravity to the situation. I would be quite keen to see that. But another option, of course, is that she's playing a character from the new Expanded Universe. By new Expanded Universe, I mean not the books or the comic books, although that is possible, but more likely that she could be a character to come across from Star Wars Rebels. Bearing in mind that they are set in the same sort of time frame, it wouldn't surprise me if she was playing one of those characters. Now, there are two significant female characters in Star Wars Rebels. You've got Hera, who is played by Vanessa Marshall on the TV show, and you've got the Mandalorian character on that show called Sabine Wren. Just a little bit of a side note, I do suspect Sabine might actually be Obi-Wan's daughter, but we'll put a pin in that. We'll come back to that in another episode. So Sabine Wren is played by Tia Sikar in the TV show, and I don't see why, if they're going to cast that character in the movies, why she couldn't come across and play that character in live action. It would make sense. She'd be the right sort of age. She's age appropriate. She has feature experience. I don't see why they wouldn't do that. But if they were going to put Felicity Jones into one of those roles, could that be where we're going to go in Star Wars Anthology Rogue One? Initially, I got quite excited thinking that she might be playing Hera, because Hera is a kick-ass pilot on the TV show, and Felicity Jones could be playing that character. She could be a pilot, and it could kick off Rogue Squadron, for all we know. If she was to play the other option, she was to play Sabine, and she's an explosives expert on the show, so that could be in keeping with a soldier in the army fighting the good fight for the rebellion. Either way, I do kind of think that they would be missing a trick if they didn't use another character, bring a character across from the clone, from the TV show Rebels. They might be limiting themselves a little bit. One thing that does concern me about using Hera as the lead character is the fact that you would need to put the actress under significant prosthetic makeup. Perhaps that wouldn't be entirely practical. Now, I was called out on my original blog post when someone accused me of being xenophobic for not wanting an alien in a lead role. So I guess I should really address that. It's not about not wanting an alien in a lead role. It's about the practicalities of putting an actor or an actress through immense amounts of makeup before they start shooting at the end of their shooting day. It doesn't really seem that practical. And I think that's probably why you find most of the characters in Star Wars movies are human, or at least of human appearance, because they don't have to go through those extended sessions in the makeup chair. It lengthens their day, it limits the director's options. Perhaps that's not the way to go. Sabine, yeah, she's an option because she doesn't have an awful lot of makeup, but she is very cartoon character-like for a movie like Rogue One. So let's explore the third option. This is my favourite option. So, could Felicity Jones be playing a character from the original trilogy? Now, I think there is an argument to be made that she is, in fact, playing a character, someone we know very well from Return of the Jedi, Mon Mothma, the rebel leader. I really think there could be something to this theory. Mon Mothma had a very small part, but a very crucial part in Return of the Jedi. She referenced theft of Death Star plans, so if this is the character from Rogue One who helped steal the original Death Star plans, it would be in keeping with that characterisation that she would be overseeing the assault on the second Death Star. She's a significant player within the Rebellion, so maybe if it is Felicity Jones' character in Rogue One, she would have worked her way up the ranks from foot soldier to Rebellion leader. Kind of like this. Age-wise, there's not a huge gap between the two. You have to be a little bit creative with the numbers there. If Felicity Jones is playing slightly older than her actual 31 years, she would be coming somewhere close to the actress that originally portrayed Mon Mothma, who was 55 when they shot Return of the Jedi. And if you said there's maybe 5 or 6 years between the events of Rogue One, the events of Return of the Jedi, you know, you kind of have to be a bit creative with the numbers, but at the end of the day, Obi-Wan in Revenge of the Sith was supposedly in his 40s and Ewan McGregor was in his early 30s. So there is precedence for us being creative with our numbers when it comes to actors and characters' ages. Does it make sense? Could she be Mon Mothma? I think it could be. I think, in fact, she will be central to the story of Rogue One. In fact, I think she's the title character of Rogue One. I suspect she goes by the call sign Rogue One in the movie, and that she may, in fact, have a ship. Maybe that ship in Return of the Jedi is call sign Rogue One. We hear Admiral Ackbar refer to his ship as Home One. Could Rogue One be the title of her battleship in Return of the Jedi? If it is Rogue One, is the Rogue Squadron her fleet? Do they all answer to her? There could be something to this. I honestly think that is the answer. If you look at the recent trailer for the digital release of the Star Wars saga in iTunes on Amazon Prime, the trailer that came out randomly featured an appearance by Mon Mothma about the 1:30 mark in the trailer. There's a very short appearance from Mon Mothma. She's never been in any promotional materials for the previous HD releases. She wasn't in the Blu-ray release trailer. Just for this, are the filmmakers reminding us that this character exists? Are they reminding us that she's significant because suddenly she's going to play a huge part in the spin-off movies? I think there's something to that. So what do you think? Have your say down in the comments. Do you think we might be seeing Felicity Jones portray Mon Mothma in Star Wars Rogue One? Will that be a call sign? Do you think she could be playing a character from Rebels that's making its way into the live-action cinematic universe? Let us know in the comments. Join the conversation. I'll see you next time. Hey everyone, it's Mark from mgfn.co.uk and this is episode 3 of the Kessel Run Tubecast. My random Star Wars musings from my commute to work. What better way to celebrate episode 3 of a podcast than to talk about episode 3 of the Star Wars franchise, Revenge of the Sith. I only just realised, or it was pointed out to me a couple of days ago, that this is the 10th anniversary of Revenge of the Sith. Cannot believe where that time's gone. I still remember the first time I saw that film like it was yesterday. But I thought it might be a good idea to celebrate 10 years, to list 10 moments from Revenge of the Sith that I would probably say are my favourite aspects of the film. In reverse order, number 10... I've got General Grievous. I'm not a massive fan of the character, but it is kind of a nice nod to the origins of Darth Vader. You've got this white, armoured, cyborg character. Somebody that was physically diminished by something. I know they go into it in the expanded universe. Somebody trying to modify himself in some way, but I thought the character was pretty interesting. I like the way it was voiced by Matt Wood, sound designer, sort of Padawan learner to Ben Burtt, if you like. Yeah, not a bad character at all. Added some interesting effects to the fight scenes, especially when he goes up against Obi-Wan Kenobi with the 4 lightsabers. I've used that scene to calibrate home theatre installations on a number of occasions. It's pretty stunning. So that's point number 10, General Grievous. Point 9. The birth of Luke and Leia. So coming like right at the end of the movie, as you would expect, handing off nicely to the original movies, seeing those twins born, the tragedy of the loss of Padme at the same time as these kids came into the world. Their birth is in perfect synchronization on screen, at least with the birth of Darth Vader as he gets locked in to his suit and takes his final breath. Those kids come in kicking and screaming, taking their first breaths. Nice bit of poetry. I think George hit that perfectly. Point number 8. Sticking to the theme of kids, but from the different side of the coin. Anakin slaughtering all the younglings. Bloody hell. That really added a bit of weight, didn't it? That was a bold move, I think, to send Anakin in there and start his Jedi purge with the smallest offerings. And that little boy they got to play that role, I don't know who he was, asked what to do, and he had his little lightsaber. He was the first one, presumably, to buy it. Stunning. I really like that element. Oh, a little side note as well. One of the Jedi that come out, the one that comes out as Bail Organa is making his escape, that's Jet Lucas, George Lucas's son, in a little cameo there. It's quite interesting. Right, point number 7. Lord Vader gets his name. We were led to believe that there would be the whole Lord Vader Rise thing, if you believe the trailer. It shows you how creatively edited that trailer was. But when Anakin is christened Darth Vader by Palpatine, just after he takes out Mace Windu, we get to see one of cinema's most compelling villains brought to life. Point 6. Darth Sidious versus the Jedi. Christ, that guy was sitting on that for a long time, and he really desperately wanted to reveal who he was, I think, and this was his crowning moment. A number of Jedi, I think it was 4 Jedi, sent in to dispatch Senator Palpatine before he became, or Chancellor Palpatine before he became the Emperor. And Christ, were they outmatched. I don't really know why he found it so easy to take out the first 3 and then struggle so much with Mace. It seemed to be a one-sided battle. Perhaps there was some production limitations. I know Ian McBeamid had trouble with some of the sword fighting choreography. Maybe they wanted to scale it down to get it to a more convincing one-on-one duel rather than a huge, elaborate Duel of the Fates-style fight scene for him to try and negotiate. But I liked it. I like his acrobatics. And I like how quickly he lost it and he revealed just how insane he really was. Point 5, Order 66. Oh, I wonder. I did try with putting this higher up in the list, but Order 66, that really came out of nowhere. We all knew the Jedi would need to be wiped out at some point. Looking at the origins of the story and seeing how Yoda and Obi-Wan were the surviving Jedi in the original trilogy, it stood to reason that most of these numbers were going to get wasted at some point. I just assumed that was going to be Vader and his Jedi purge. Instead, it was a massive betrayal on the part of the clones, triggered by Sidious offering that Order 66. Quite breathtaking. Okay, point 4, Anakin versus Dooku. There's quite a few duels in this movie, and I really like this one. This one, I think, needs to get special mention because it really does riff on the original trilogy quite a bit. You've got the duel between the Sith Lord and the hero Jedi taking place in a spire on a spacecraft. The spire obviously meant to represent the Jedi spire at the temple and the Emperor spire on the second Death Star. But this is where Anakin faces Dooku the way he would later face his own son Luke in Return of the Jedi. And sitting in the wings, watching on, jeering and cheering, is Palpatine. And you can see everything at work here, and you can see an alternate path that Luke could have taken if he'd have been as weak as his father and given into the hate and slaughtered his opponent. His fate would have been somewhat different. I really like the echoes. If you know anything about the Star Wars ring theory, you'll know that there's a lot of rhythms that are repeated in Star Wars storytelling, and this is one of them. And this is one I think that really works. It's very it's very apparent that this was planned intentionally. The fates of these two Skywalker characters mirrored right up until a crucial decision is made. Point 3. Very small moment, nice character moment. It's Anakin laying wounded on Mustafar after his duel with Obi-Wan. He's left with just one mechanical hand, And as he catches fire, he just screams, "I hate you," at Obi-Wan. His eyes are all glowing, and it's just as Obi-Wan has told Anakin, he thought of him as a brother, that he loved him. It underpins the betrayal of a character falling into evil the way Anakin has done. And that final spit of hatred really does show what was inside Anakin all along, I think. Okay, number two, getting there now. Anakin versus Obi-Wan. Probably the actual duel of the fates here. Anakin fighting for every fibre in his body to try and do what he thinks is right, to try and secure Padme's fate by selling his soul to the devil, essentially. And Obi-Wan's duel, not just to survive, but to try and pull his friend back from the darkness of that abyss he's so willingly entering. It is a stunning duel, not just for the physical choreography, the stunt work, the cinematography, the special effects, but what it really symbolises, that battle to save somebody's soul. It is the pinnacle of the prequel trilogy. Okay, number one favourite part of the movie, the opening part of the movie. I believe the special effects scene is called the waterfall scene. It's the low orbit battle over Coruscant, with the two Jedi starfighters screaming into this battle, trying desperately to make their way to Grievous's warship. It's just full on. There's so much going on in those scenes. It's beautifully made. Really, really exciting stuff. It's got a great score. The soundtrack, the beating of those drums all the way through that, the rhythmic pounding all the way through that scene is just staggering. And to think that that's the first thing we saw when that film opened, how exciting. 10 years on, it's still a stunning scene. I love it. High point, absolute high point for the prequel trilogy, I think, is the climax of this Clone War. So that's my top 10 points from Revenge of the Sith to celebrate its 10th birthday. Be very interested in hearing your thoughts. What are your favourite parts of the prequel trilogy, not just Revenge of the Sith? Leave them in the comments. Hit us up on Twitter. Don't forget to vote for Kyle Newman to direct one of these anthology movies. There's a link in the descriptions next to Vote for Kyle. Just click on that and send the resulting tweet. We'll be back. Episode 4, I'm probably going to talk about two characters that may or may not be appearing in future Star Wars movies. Don't forget to click subscribe and share this TubeCast. See you next time.